Matthew chapter 2 is where we've been for the last few days, for the last few sermons. And Matthew chapter 2, we've launched out of chapter 1. And Matthew chapter 1 has said something interesting that has been the sermon series, God with Us. And you don't have to turn there, and PowerPoint doesn't have to be there, but behold, the virgin, verse 23, chapter 1, the virgin shall be with child and shall bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which translated means God with us, with us kind of God. And I want to just affirm some things by way of recap that the first week we talked about God with us, that word in the original language, the God with us, the only God, become flesh, John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. And so we affirm that this foundational truth, this fundamental truth in the Christian faith, is that God became flesh. And that if you can accept that, if you can get there, if you can get that and accept that, that God became flesh, that this really happened, if you can accept that, then you can accept that Jesus healed people, walked on water, raised Lazarus from the dead, and he himself rose from the dead after 3 days after dying on the cross. And if you can accept this fundamental foundational truth that God with us means that Jesus became flesh, God, very God, became flesh to be with us, that he himself is the infinite God-man, that God is personified in the person of Jesus. John 1 again says that no one has seen God at any time, but Jesus has revealed him. The God that we know is found in the person of Jesus. Listen, let's affirm it as a group this morning. There is no other God. He is unique. He is the foundation of the universe. Before matter and energy existed, God, Jesus, was. It's foundational to the whole universe is a person. It's Jesus. They spent so much money trying to figure out what caused everything and what started the Big Bang. Listen, we know what began everything. Life came before matter, not the other way around. Matter did not bring forth life. Life in the person of Jesus brought forth everything. This is foundational. This is foundational to what we believe as believers. And then week two, we kind of went into Genesis, the relationship. God came to be with us, to have relationship with us. And that's the nature of the God that we serve, a God that isn't distant, doesn't just spin the world on its axis and want nothing to do with us. God is extremely involved. He's Word, he's relationship, he's discussion, he's a God that wants to be intimate with us. And so even throughout the Old Testament, God was at least in some respect somebody that you could approach, though very carefully. Remember, the priest were very careful because sin ruined relationship. God restored relationship in the person of Jesus 2,000 years ago. Now we can have personal relationship with God. Last week we looked at the relationship of God relative to Jesus and how we understand who Jesus is in the gifts. Gold being that Jesus was given the gift of gold. Well, that spoke something of the kingship authority of God, that God is sovereign. He's sovereign. He's king. He's ruler. And he has something to say about the way that we live. God is sovereign. He's king. Gold, frankincense, that God is our high priest, that God in the person of Jesus is a God that builds a bridge to us in order to have a relationship. And then myrrh speaks to the death of Jesus. And then today I want to read Matthew chapter 2, the story that most Christmas cards depict. And we'll begin at verse 1. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, Magi, a priesthood from the Medes, they were priests of the Medes, Gentile priests that were also astrologers. The Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him, gathering together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired, this being Herod, inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what has been written by the prophets. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah, for out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and when you've found him, report to me so that I too may come and worship him." And hearing the king, they went their way. And the star which they had seen in the east went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshiped him. Then opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way. Now, this story is, how many read this story before Christmas, maybe Christmas Eve? How many do that or did that with your kids, this particular story? How many read the Luke version of the story or did that with your kids? How many, okay, how many just don't do that? It seems like just don't do that at all. All right, so we do the, now, well, when the kids started getting old enough to read, we had the kids, Christmas Eve, read the longer Luke narrative, right? The long story. This one we don't read. But I love this story because this has got unique elements to it. There's a sense in which there's some drama that is building up here. Herod the king, was a ruthless, murderous king. As a matter of fact, history tells us that Herod at one point thought that a coup, an alliance between some of his family were brewing in order to kill Herod and therefore ascend to the throne. Some of the sons were potentially plotting against Herod. History records for us that Herod killed his favorite wife. He had a favorite wife, killed her, and two of Herod's sons in order to maintain power. So you can imagine, in this time, Herod, wicked as he was, starts to hear of a king of the Jews. Doesn't understand much about it, but just he starts hearing that, and he's got a problem. God's word just recorded for us that he was disturbed. He gets troubled by this news, and so he brings the Magi and inquires of the people, who is this person? It was a king. The prophets record this, going to be born over here. Well, when you find him, come let me know. Well, he wants to kill Jesus. He's not interested in worshiping Jesus. He wants to kill Jesus, well, for reasons that you understand. He wants to maintain his authority as king. This is interesting, this story. So I want to look at this just really quick. We're going to talk about worship this morning, but I want to talk about the three different kinds of people that you find in this story. You find in this story that there are three basic kinds of people, and they're reflected by how they respond to Jesus. Okay? You got that? They respond. Three different kinds of people respond three different kinds of ways to Jesus. You have people that are opposed to Jesus. They want to kill Jesus. Okay? opposers, people that object to Jesus, namely Herod. Namely Herod. Herod wants to oppose Jesus. Now, in Matthew, you find other opposers later, people that want to oppose Jesus. But Jesus is quite controversial. He was controversial then. I would posit a theory that Jesus is as controversial today. And that you have the same three kind of people. You have people that oppose Jesus. If you turn on Main Street Media, welcome opposers. Welcome to the scene, opposers. The Main Street Media and the culture of our day, for the most part, oppose Jesus. And they may not say they oppose Jesus, but if they could, they would eliminate Christians and Christianity. And they basically hate everything that we stand for. And therefore, the messenger. Opposers. You also have, if you notice in the story, there's an inquiry made of the people. There's an inquiry made of the people and the priests. And they say, well, yeah, the story is this, I'll just read it. So gathering together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what has been written by the prophets. Group number two. Group number two. Now, this is the vast majority of people are in this group, indifferent. Indifferent. These people are being inquired of Jesus, and they have no idea that Jesus is being born, and they really don't care. They're treating this as a piece of news. Maybe it's over here on the side, but they're not invested in it. They don't care to find out where Jesus is. They're not in the story other than to inform people. They're more or less indifferent, disinterested in Jesus. Right? The priests and the high priest and the Jews were, for the most part, disinterested and indifferent. I would say that that's the majority of the people today that live in the streets today are indifferent to who Jesus is. Interesting from a historic perspective, perhaps. Very thankful that Jesus is alive because Christmas comes around once a year, and if they can thank Jesus for anything, they get some gifts out of the deal. But for the most part, disinterested. May I propose that the church is made up of a lot of indifferent, disinterested people? Jesus is over here as an important little thing, something that we know is important, something that we know we should take seriously. But for the most part, in their real life, they are indifferent to Jesus. They put him on a shelf. They see him Sunday. They worship him. And then, for the most part, the rest of their day, they're indifferent. Mind you, these same chief priests and the scribes, these people, indifference oftentimes becomes objectors. All these people will become eventually those that will hate Jesus and want to kill him. Because what Jesus does, and we talked about this last week, what Jesus does is if he's king, then that means something for us. If he's come and he's spoken as the God of the universe, then that means that he's got something to say for us, and that means that he is in charge, and people just like Herod find it, they want to be their own king, they want to be their own God, and when somebody jumps into that space, that's trouble. There's the moment everybody's indifferent to Jesus until they realize Jesus has something to say about their life, and then all of a sudden they become haters because nobody wants to serve another God. They're quite happy being a God for themselves. Might I again say that the modern church is full of indifferent people that eventually become obstinate to Jesus? But then you have this third group. You have a group of real worshipers. Passionate worshipers. I would even call them adoring worshipers. Adoring worshipers. Group three. And we find them. We find them here. There are adoring worshipers in this room, right? Adoring worshipers. Okay, that's the group we want to be in. Not indifferent, not haters, not indifferent. Definitely not haters, but adoring worshipers. We're going to look at this. Who are the adoring worshipers? Well, the Magi. But in Luke, we also see that it's the shepherds. And so you see adoring worshipers everywhere. And so let's just again read here. We can pick it up at verse 10. And when they saw the star, notice what adoring worshipers like these Magi. These priests from the area of the Medes. Notice what they do. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with great joy. With great joy. After coming to the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell to the ground and they worshiped him. Key term there. They worshiped him. Key verb there. And then opening their treasure, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, what does it look like when you are in party three? Which you're not a hater. You're probably not a hater. Okay. Maybe, and I don't know your heart. Likely you're not indifferent to Jesus. Okay. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. You're not a hater. You're not indifferent. Okay. I don't know your heart, so I don't know, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. You're neither of those two things. You are in this room, an adoring worshiper. All right. What does that look like? And by the way, this is really important so that we can frame the next 2 days of our Christmas life, not necessarily around the trees, not necessarily about the... I'm so excited this year. I'm so excited. I've never made... Okay. Teresa's gotten me onto something. She made these beautiful cinnamon rolls, and I determined I was going to make cinnamon rolls. So tomorrow, I'm going to make cinnamon rolls so that Tuesday morning for Christmas, cinnamon rolls are hot and ready after an hour of getting to room temperature and a little quick rise. They're going to be ready. Homemade. Usually I make the cans. And that's not good enough for my family at Christmas time. So we're going to make homemade yeast brioche dough Christmas cinnamon rolls. Okay? I am excited about it. That to me is going to be great. I can't wait for tomorrow to start making these cinnamon rolls. I am exceedingly excited. We've wrapped all our gifts and now the food. We're going to have such great food. I can't wait. All right, so I get really excited. I get so excited. And so for me, I'm letting you in on my little universe here. For me, I'm super duper duper excited about the food because I got the eggnog, got everything ready to go. All right. Okay. So here's the challenge. I don't want I want Tuesday to be as much worship about what we're celebrating, that Jesus came to earth and that we're celebrating him above everything else. And we're going to have a good time watching Christmas movies, maybe go see a movie ourselves at the theater. We were going to see, amen, God bless you. Hey, that's all right. It means somebody's awake. She should be in here. She should be in here. So we were going to see Mary Poppins for Christmas, but we watched it Friday night. Fantastic. Fantastic. It was really good. So I don't know what we're going to do. But anyway, I want to be a worshiper Tuesday. I want to be a worshiper. I don't know what that plays like, except that at least periodically in the day that I think back and I settle on what we're really doing, and I settle my mind and my heart on the fact that what we're celebrating is that God is with us, that God came to earth to be with me, that I have relationship because God loves me, and I'm thankful. And that heart is worship. That heartbeat. And I would encourage you to be an adoring worshiper. I want to look at three things that adoring worshipers, very quickly, three things that adoring worshipers do. Three things that adoring worshipers do. Let's just begin with number one. Three things that adoring worshipers are or do. They are joyful. Number one, they are joyful. Anybody could have preached this. This is very basic exegesis. You know what exegesis is? Where you look at the text, you try to get something from it. This one's basic. Oh, they rejoice exceedingly with great joy. They rejoice. No, notice the language here. I just love it. They rejoiced, which is the verb for joy. They rejoiced. In other words, they were joying. They were joying. They were joying. I know that's not a word, so they came up with one called rejoice, right? Okay, so they were rejoicing. They were rejoicing exceedingly. So notice how tightening the screws get on this path. They exceedingly rejoiced. They exceedingly rejoiced. That's a lot of rejoicing. Exceedingly. Where'd my Bible go? They exceedingly rejoiced with great joy. Does that sound like joy is a part of this? They exceedingly rejoiced with what? With great joy. I don't know exactly. I haven't studied this out too much because I don't know that it needs too much study. I think that what it says is what it says, that a Christian, when they come face to face with the reality of who Jesus is, there is great joy that comes along with that. If you are a believer today and you've come to a place where you have a relationship with Jesus, being confronted with Jesus is a joyful experience. How many know people that nobody in this room, I assure you, but you've met people that their relationship with God is all sour pussy face? Do you know what I'm talking about? Just not very joyful, you know, just not very happy. Listen. If you're a believer today, then the reality of God should be sunk into you such that you are a joyful kind of person. And our worship should be joyful. Should be joyful. Exceedingly rejoiced with great joy. That's big. That's big. To me, this is big. So what does an adoring worshiper look like? An adoring worshiper is joyful at your very essence. Okay? At your very essence. You are joyful. Now, everybody's got different personalities, and some are more serious than others. I get that. Not talking about personality. I'm talking about an inner reality. An inner reality of joy. So, number one, a joy. Okay, number two, after coming to the house, mind you, they're not in the stable, right? Because this is quite some time later, historically. They are in the house now. They're in the house now. They weren't in the stable, but for just a couple days. So the Christmas cards are not correct. You know, we understand that. The Magi did not come to Jesus for maybe a full year after. Just want to make sure that we understand the story in its correct context. After coming to the house, they saw the child with Mary's mother. And there's something interesting that happens here. To a baby, no less, they fell and they worshiped. An adoring worshiper is humble. There's something about adoring worship that's humble. There's something about understanding that you're not God, that God is God. I'm less, He's more. I'm not great, He's great. I'm me, He's God. I'm mortal, He's immortal. I'm finite, He's infinite. I'm little, He's much. And when you come to that realization of who God is, there's a humility, that proper humility that comes with that. And that showed up joyful, absolutely joyful. And it also shows up in humble. Shows up in joyful, it shows up in humble. And sometimes it's appropriate to fall on your face and worship God. I don't know how many times you've had that experience of worship where you've literally, maybe in the privacy of your own home, I don't think it's ever happened here, where you just, oh man, I just got to get on the floor and just worship God on the floor, like on my knees. That might be a little strange in church context. It might be strange, but it is entirely biblical. There's a humble humility that comes with worshiping God that I think is going to be important as we enter into these last few days. I say last few days because the 12 days of Christmas begins Christmas Day. You know that, don't you? The 12th day of Christmas is on January 5th. Everybody should know that. That's the day of Epiphany, and that's the day that the Magi actually are said to have approached Jesus and given the gifts. So the 12 days of Christmas begins December 25th. That's why our Christmas tree stays up till at least then, because that's biblical, okay? It's not biblical, but it is true. 12 days of Christmas. How many did not know that? Now you know something. 12 days of Christmas begins in 2 days. All right, and then ends on the day of Epiphany, which in Hispanic culture, everybody knows this. I've said this a lot. Now I'm just talking again. I'm back to talking. I grew up where we got Christmas gifts because I'm Puerto Rican, as many of you know, and I grew up in a Puerto Rican home where we celebrated Hispanic Latin American traditions, and one of those is on Three Kings Day, we call it, we'd get gifts, which is Day of Epiphany in January. We'd get gifts additional to our Christmas gifts, and we'd put out hay, as Hispanics do, put out hay for the camels, for the Three Kings camels. There's horrible theology in all this, I understand. They weren't kings, but we called them the Three Kings. And then magically in the morning, the hay is gone, all the water's gone. I believed that for years. I was probably 15 before it occurred to me that this was not reality, but that's another story. So yes, 12 days of Christmas. All right, it starts. Christmas is not over December 26th. Take joy. You just began. All right, we just began. All right, the third thing, and we're almost done. Gold, they presented to him treasures. They presented to him gold, frankincense, and myrrh. True worship, adoring worship, adoring worshipers are sacrificial. They're sacrificial. There's a sense of sacrifice that comes with worship, a sense of sacrifice, not just gifts. And this is obvious. There's a sense of sacrifice that these magi are giving tremendous, precious gifts to this child. So there's a sense in which if worship doesn't cost you something, it's not worship. And by the way, and I've said this before, and so that we ought to understand it, worship is not for you. Worship is not for you. That's why it bothers me exceptionally when people I don't like the music that much. Listen. Newsflash: the music is not for you to like. The music is for you to have an opportunity to sing something out of your heart for God to like. That just annoys me. Nobody on the planet, there's not one song that everybody likes. Everybody's got different music likes. So we just pick one, we go with it, and then we worship. Worship is not about you. It's not for you to get filled up. It's for you to release worship to God and glorify God. And there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with worshiping God, because sometimes you don't feel like it. I'm going to worship God even though I don't feel like it. I'm going to give God glory. My mind is gonna concentrate on God for just a moment, and I'm gonna sing in glory to God. It's not for me to feel better, it's for God to be worshiped. It's important that we get this right, so that we frame our worship not around the music. It's not for you to like, oh, the worship was really good. Listen, the only way the worship's good on Sunday morning, that worship was really great this morning. How many of you ever heard that? The worship was really great this morning. The only thing that makes worship great is if you worshiped to God and God was glorified. That's what makes worship great. Not the music, not the song, not the song choice. It's your heart that makes worship great. And there's an awful lot of sacrifice that comes with that. In this case, they're giving gifts in worship to God. There's no music at all. They're sacrificing of themselves with their treasure. They're also sacrificing the fact that Herod is after them. Herod will kill them if he finds out that they are worshiping this other king, and yet they sacrifice of themselves. They risk of themselves to worship God. That sacrifice. And we need to reframe our idea of what it means to be a worshiper. What it means to be a worshiper is to say, God, I'm giving you all praise. Even though, you know, some Sunday mornings you got your mind on what, A, B, C, D, and E, all the stuff that happened in life. Forget about all that stuff. All that stuff's not important. Worship God. Think about the lyrics for a moment and worship God. Give praise to God. Give Him glory. Give Him praise. Give Him your worship. That's worship. And it could be done with music, it could be done with guitars, it could be done with organs, it could be done with pipe organs, it could be done with harmonicas. It doesn't really matter. It's not about the thing, it's about the heart. And so when I say we're going to be a true worshiper this weekend, it's not about the music. You don't have to play Christian music to be a worshiper. All you have to do is say, God, just take a moment throughout your day. Pray in the morning before you get up. God, Christmas morning, God, I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful that you came to earth 2,000 years ago to be with us. And I'm going to be distracted today. Lord, I'm going to be distracted today. This is my typical sort of prayer in these times. I'm going to be distracted today, but Lord, I'm thankful. I'm beginning my day thankful for what you have done. And then as thoughts come up throughout my day of what Jesus did, because he came to die, then I just, God, thank you. Thank you today. God, thank you for coming 2,000 years ago. God, that I have a relationship with you. I'm grateful. Just tell the Lord that. Tell the Lord that. Worship. Worship is joyful. Worship's definitely joyful. Worship's definitely sacrificial, as we just learned. It's humble. This morning, three different kind of people: haters, opposers, indifferent, and adoring worshipers. What kind of person are you? What kind of person will you be Christmas Day? Christmas Eve, this season. It's great. God has given us a wonderful holiday, right? To be able to spend time with family. I'm so grateful for these holidays. But at the end of the day, it's not about any of that. It is about Jesus. It is about Jesus, and I want to encourage you to be a genuine, adoring worshiper on Christmas. An adoring worshiper. Don't be indifferent. Don't be indifferent Christmas Day. Be an adoring worshiper.